This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
What was Steph Curry screaming into the camera? What did he say?
Great question.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't know exactly what he said. I know a little bit what he said, but I don't know if I can cuss on the radio. He did say some cuss words. Yeah. This is my house. I know he said that. But before that, I don't really know what he said. He was doing a lot of screaming, a lot of celebrating. And Draymond will probably let you know in his podcast coming up.
Dub Nation, it's Kevon Looney. You're listening to Willer and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's Thursday night, so your picks stink.
Well, and I would have asked him, but it was all four of us. It didn't feel like the right time.
There's a lot going on.
To make it about me. It was about us.
And I do think that Kevon Looney, he has jumper cables.
Yep.
I think that Steve Kerr thinks that he is like the best dude ever. The best dude on the team. I think all these things are true. I also think he was fibbing a little bit there. I think he knows exactly what Steph Curry
said. Of course. But he's a good teammate. He's not going to say it.
Well, Steph said he would share it with us. We're waiting.
He won't.
Why not?
Because he won't be asked. And if asked...
Why not?
Because...
Steph, come on the show. We'll ask you.
Yeah. We should.
You won't.
He won't. And we would, and he'd be like, well, you know, guys, you know, what happens between the lines, sometimes, you know, the emotion takes over and stuff, and...
I know what he said.
We all know what he said.
You better stay here!
But he didn't stay here.
Yeah. Now back to... Willard.
Yeah.
Now back to Willard and Dibs. Take it away, Mark.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said. And he didn't stay here. And that's why he lost. I think that's what Steph was saying.
Right.
Yeah.
You should have stayed here.
You want to win that game? Yeah. You better stay here.
Yeah.
So, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Willard and Dibs in the free Odyssey app, wherever you find your favorite podcast. While you're there, check out the Morning Roast and Steiny and Goo with Clay reaction and also getting ready for 49ers and Seahawks this week. And then you have Kevon Looney on the crossover. All right. So, who do you want? If the Warriors do get to themselves to a spot where they're going to make a trade, who do you want?
I guess the only one I would want would be Giannis.
Giannis, okay.
And not Jimmy Butler. And I'm with Tim Kawakami, who joined us yesterday and said the same thing. And beyond that, Brandon Ingram is a no. And, I mean, whoever else might be available, it's a no for me.
Here's the difficulty of the spot the Warriors are in. And it's not just two things. It's sort of almost like a triangle. You know, you could stand pat. And you could say we're gonna go with what we got, and we're gonna throw a lot of different things at you, and we'll be a really good defensive team. But a lot of people in their NBA sensibilities go, okay, I like that. I don't know if that's really gonna put you in the favorites chair. You might go somewhere, probably not terribly far. How does that idea sit with Steph Curry? Probably not great. Then there's the next obvious answer. Everyone goes, well, Giannis. Giannis, okay, but do you understand, even just in terms of salary, you're talking about gutting the team.
Oh, yeah.
Gutting the team. So there is...
It's Wiggins and probably at least three more guys. Yeah. Maybe four more.
It's Kuminga, and it's Looney, and it's GP2. It might be Pods also.
Like, maybe Melton.
You cannot take any more money back in your direction than what you're giving up. It's not just your trade machine salary swap. The Warriors are up against the apron, less than $1 million to go.
And they're hard capped.
They're hard capped. They're not allowed to go over it. So you would have to cover Giannis's, I think, what is it, 48 this year? You'd have to cover that with what's going out and probably give up draft picks as well. So you could do that, and then you're very, very top heavy and fancy. Oh, you'd be fancy at the top. But now you lose your strength in numbers and your depth and your defense and all of those things. Is there someone else? Not Butler, not Giannis. Just that simple, like, two or three for one where you get a piece that makes you go from really good to great. Is that out there?
Maybe.
I mean,
we don't know who's out there, but you're talking about a guy who's making between 25 and 30 million.
Probably. It depends on how the deal is structured. Just for conversation's sake, let me throw out a name at you and see how this grabs you. And I would imagine most of our listeners are going to go, wait, who? Because he's still a young player. Turns out, though, he's with the Brooklyn Nets, and he is in the exact same position that Jonathan Kuminga is, which is that he's a fourth-year player, and they wanted to talk extension. They decided not to do it, so he has gone into this season in sort of prove-it mode, could be a restricted free agent at the end of the year. Is he in the Brooklyn Nets' plans going forward? I don't know. His name is Cam Thomas, and he is a guard. He is a two-guard, and he is a scorer. He's scoring 23 a night right now. This is somebody who can create his own shot. Now, a couple of problems, and they're not small problems. Number one, he only makes $4 million this year. So what on earth could you offer them that would make them say, yeah, we'd like to give up on Cam Thomas, and all that needs to be returned is $4 million. Now, could you add in another contract that maybe they want to send toward you, and that way they could get a Kuminga and a Wiggins off of your roster or something like that? That's number one. But number two is Cam Thomas's, shall we say, not known for his defense?
Sure. Yeah.
Work in progress is the latest phrase that I was given. And last year, he was objectively awful on the defensive end of the ball. And he's still a very young player. And it makes me think of you know, the commentary that we had from the Warriors just recently with regard to Jonathan Kuminga, where, was it Ron Adams? Was that who it was? Was it Ron Adams who came on and was like, you know, Jonathan, he's a young player, wants a contract, and so he forgot about the defensive side of the ball for a little while. But now he's moving it back to center. Could they do that with Cam Thomas? The only reason I bring his name up is if you scan the league for the second scorer, somebody who can legitimately give you 20 a night, there's just not that many people who are going to be available at all this year.
Agreed. And right now Cam is averaging, I think you mentioned it, 24 a night.
Yeah, almost
23.8 right now. And he's a guy who can absolutely fill it up. Not a really efficient score, 36% from three, not great from two. He can shoot free throws, though, which is something to keep in mind.
Nice.
But if you're Brooklyn and you want to make a deal like this, you're going to want to attach something to it. And I'm looking at Brooklyn, and I look at Ben Simmons making $40 million. And
yeah,
if I'm Brooklyn,
I thought of that.
I'm saying, okay, you want Cam Thomas, guess what you get to have with it? Or you could take Bogdanovich, who's making $19 million, also expiring. Dennis Schroeder's making $13 million, expiring. If you're Brooklyn, you're looking to get rid of something else with your young player. And if you're not going to sign Cam Thomas long-term, and I don't know if they are, but they're clearly rebuilding. They want picks, and they want controllable assets, and they also want to get rid of some of this crap that they have.
Yeah, now here's the
thing.
And
they got some crap.
They got some crap. Everybody got some crap now. They're looking to get rid of them. Now, Ben Simmons is expiring, though.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know that actually helps Brooklyn. Like, they want they want those expiring large contracts because it gives them flexibility. So when you see someone dump a contract, it's usually something that they feel is going to kind of be around their neck for a few more years.
Yeah.
So I was looking at their salaries also, and there are some names and Claxton and, you know, but I really don't know. I don't know who Brooklyn wants. I don't know if they know yet who they want. They may want Cam Thomas.
Well, they should. I mean, maybe if they want to,
I don't know if he's, I don't know yet if he's a winning basketball player.
Right, but like, just because you don't know if he's going to be a winning basketball player until you have a winning team around him. Like, is Jordan Poole a winning basketball player?
I would argue no.
Well, he's won, and now you look at Jordan Poole this year, but not and he's taking steps forward toward being a better player than he was last year. So can Jordan Poole be a winning basketball player? Yeah, he'll never be a winning basketball player if he's your one, but if he's your three, you can win with Jordan Poole.
Well, but that's the point. He's not the three in Washington. He is, in theory, kind of the one.
Well, the point would be to keep him to a point where he is the three.
Yeah, but
and that's what you want to do.
I don't know if that's what Jordan wants. I don't know if Washington has the people to sort of push him down the board. Like, that's the whole thing in the NBA structure that's always difficult. I think it's why Andrew Wiggins ended up being largely, I know he frustrates people, but he's largely been a wonderful addition for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, champion.
He won a championship. And it's because no one asked him to be a one. And quite frankly, no one's really asking him to be a two. He could tuck into a spot where he could play hard on defense. There wasn't an overwhelming amount that was asked of him on the offensive end. And when he does have a big scoring night, it feels like this massive bonus for your team. But you're really only counting on him for like 15 points. You're never asking him for 25 or 30.
Right.
If he does it, yay. But if not, it's okay. You can still play. Everybody needs to find that number with their organization. Are you a one? Are you a two? Are you a three? What's the good fit? And of course, the problem often is nobody sees themselves as a two or a three. They all see themselves as a one because they want to be paid like ones.
Right, right.
But not everybody can handle that. Most can't.
Yes, and if you're Cam Thomas and you're looking at what you're doing right now and you basically are Brooklyn's one and you want to be paid like Brooklyn's one, I'm sure he'd rather stay there and get paid and let them build around him as opposed to get traded to, for example, Golden State. And if he becomes a Warrior and it's Steph and Draymond and Wiggins are still here, well, now he's not going to be able to make $40 million a year.
Correct. Correct. Text line is loving the idea. A bunch of different texters. Thank you for listening. Just sent in the name Robert Williams, the big guy from Portland.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was in Boston before that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Often hurt.
Exactly.
Often hurt.
But the Warriors, if I'm out there looking for a player, and if we're not going to go big game hunting, if we're going medium game hunting, find me a big. Find me somebody who can do what Kevon does, what TJD does, but maybe at a little bit more productive rate, productive level. And if I'm going to go out and get a player, I don't need another wing. We got wings coming out of our wings. We need a big.
But do any of them offer the ability to say, I can give you 20 a night whenever you need it? Whenever you need it.
Probably not.
Snap my fingers, I'll give you 20.
But I don't think any player who's out there is a guy that you want to go out there and acquire.
You might be right.
And Cam Thomas is great. It's a great name, and those are great numbers. But he doesn't come in here, and immediately you don't want him to give you 20 a night.
Probably not.
Right.
I mean, part of this exercise is to get to the point of, like, this is great. I'm so glad they're 9-2. I don't think there's a great trade out there, even though they might need one at some point.
Right.
That's kind of the point. We're sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. You ready?
Oh, I'm been ready.
Are you sure?
Born ready.
You positive?
I hope he's ready because I'm coming for him now.
This is a big one now. This is sort of like coming out of the bye week type of a feel here. Executive producer of NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Mano a mano with Dan Dibley. Who's got better notes? Who's got better tape? We find out coming up next, only on Willard and Dibbs.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW. The ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And Dibby.
On 95.7 The Game.
Well, I believe that it was on this show that well before Ricky Pearsall was scoring touchdowns and getting a lot of targets in games, I believe it was on this show that someone once called him Juicy.
Yeah, one man, and it wasn't me.
No.
And I'm a fan, but I'd never use the word juicy like he's some sort of a succulent fruit or something. Who would do that?
It was a memorable moment courtesy of our next guest who joins us on the River Islands guest line. He is the senior producer of NFL Films. He breaks it down like no one else. He is Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, good afternoon.
Gentlemen, what's happening?
We're hanging out, man. And in fact, I think we should start off by letting you kind of go a little bit deeper into those early comments that you made about about Ricky Pearsall and what we're now seeing. What do you think?
Well, I mean, all that came from watching his tape at Florida. So, you know, I liked him a lot when I watched his tape and evaluated him coming out of college. He's big. He can run. And, you know, what we talk about a lot in our matchup room is when a guy, you know, has some quickness to him, some burst, we say he's got a lot of juice. So that's kind of, you know, where that expression came from. My guess is I'm not the only one who uses it, but, you know, you see that right away. You can tell that when you watch guys on tape, the guys that have sort of that little extra quickness to them. It's not a pure speed thing. I mean, Pearsall is not a 4.3 guy, but you can just see the way he moves. And in fact, on that touchdown, there was a spot after he caught the ball where you could see that there was a little more giddy app. He just kind of put it into another gear. So he's a little juicy.
And that was a juicy play, and I want to go through that a little bit more technically,
okay,
Greg, because, you know, 21 personnel, but Saubert's in and not Kittle, and they run that little route down the middle. What did you see on tape that made that scheme so successful?
Well, they were in 21. It was a 3-by-1. They were in the pistol formation, and it was not McCaffrey on that play. It was actually Mason. It was a four-man route concept that expanded the three-under, three-deep coverage because they technically blitzed Whitehead. He ended up peeling because of Mason, but he was technically a blitzer, so it was three-under, three-deep coverage, and they ran a double dig. So Saubert ran a dig, and Pearsall ran a dig, and the nature of the coverage was that both those routes isolated linebackers. So obviously, who do you prefer to throw it to? You prefer to throw it to the wide receiver matched against the linebacker, and it was a backup linebacker, J.J. Russell. So basically, you know, you never know if a coach like Kyle has a feel for what the defensive call will be. You know, very often coaches have a feel for that, but it was a great call against the defense that they got, because ultimately what happened was Pearsall was isolated on his dig route against Russell, a linebacker. So Purdy, you know, with really good anticipation, hit Pearsall. He was on the outside dig, and there was run after catch.
Greg, what we were all waiting for when we were heading into this game is to see Christian McCaffrey back on the field. So what did you see in terms of how they used him and how it may have changed the 49ers' attack?
Well, they use him the way they always used him. Nothing was different. He looked good, I thought, despite the yardage totals. I thought that he looked crisp. He moved well. I thought he had some burst. And again, you saw the motions. You saw the shifting. You know, this is what they do with him. And you saw that with he and Samuel, things are different. And, you know, we talked about this, that it expands their shifting and motion offense. It expands their options in the pass game. I mean, you're not going to run the route when McCaffrey caught the 30-yard reception in the fourth quarter, which was an unbelievable play in all respects. But, you know, you're not going to see that with Garendo or Mason. So, you know, right there you're seeing something that is different because McCaffrey's on the field.
And let's go to that route because they're down four at that point, and it's, again, 21 personnel, and it's a little bit of a wheel route. The throw from Brock and the route itself, what did you see on tape that made that such a win?
Well, that was just one of those special plays, which, you know, you don't know that when the play starts, because he's running kind of a wheel route, as you said, and normally on a wheel, the way he ran it, you're giving the quarterback a vertical indicator, so he knows when you're going to take it vertical. But Purdy, because of pressure, inside pressure, couldn't wait for the indicator, and he just had to throw it up. And it obviously turned out to be a perfect throw that McCaffrey caught. And I know McCaffrey was pissed that, you know, when he cut inside, he didn't score. But it was just one of those special plays because, you know, all Purdy could do in response to the pressure was throw it up. And it turned out to be placed beautifully.
NFL Films, Greg Cosell with us as he is every single week here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Hey, speaking to what you just brought up, the pressure, because I'm not, you know, I'm not like you, Greg. I'm not one of these tape people. I need to know what's going on here because I'm hearing from fans a lot. It looks like the offensive line or the running backs, whoever, whatever the responsibilities are, Brock Purdy too often is dealing with very quick pressure or missed blocks or missed assignments. Is that accurate, or what do you see right now with their line in general?
Yeah, I would say it's been a combination of the fact that the there's been a little more pressure this year. And you'd have to know all their protection calls to know exactly who makes mistakes. But there's been a little more pressure, and I think that Purdy has also responded to what is, by NFL standards, not necessarily pressure by leaving the pocket at times too early. And I thought in this game he didn't really do that as much. I thought he settled in this game pretty well. That could also be a function of just feeling better about everything because McCaffrey's back. So I don't know. I don't know what's in Purdy's head. But, yeah, there's probably been at times this year a little more pressure that Purdy has responded to. Ideally, that goes away. You know, look, even when they're playing at their best, the fact is that the right tackle, McKivitz, is not great in one-on-one pass protection, and there are going to be plays where he does get beat, or he does allow the pass rusher to squeeze Purdy in the pocket. I think the right guard, the rookie Pooney's, played very, very well for the most part, so that's not been, you know, a major issue. But, yeah, that's probably fair, but like I said, without knowing all the specific protection calls and how they block particular fronts and how they block particular pressures, it's, you can't pinpoint one player or what the overall issue is.
It looks like Jake Brendel's had some problems as a center in pass protection. Is there anything you can do from an offensive standpoint to mitigate that when your center gets beat?
Yeah, that then again, that depends on the front and the pressure. A lot of teams, you know, line up in five-man fronts where they want to dictate one-on-one, and your center, everybody all across the line has to block one-on-one. You know, teams, it depends on what they want to do with their blitz concepts. So, you know, all these things become specific to opponents, specific to particular schemes. And then, like I said, it's how you choose to protect it. And, you know, Chris Forster has been doing this a long time. He's one of the best in the business. He's been doing it over 30 years. So, you know, and sometimes guys get beat. You know, I mean, that happens in the NFL. Sometimes guys get beat.
Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, Greg, 4 years ago, D'Amino Lenore was a young player who was behind Ambry Thomas on the depth chart. And look at him now. They signed him to a big fancy extension. What have you seen on tape of his development from year over year the last few?
He's up to you guys' pay grade, huh?
Finally.
Yeah, getting closer.
Yeah. You know, he's become a really key player on their defense because of what he does. He plays outside in their base defense, and he plays slot in their nickel. And they're almost an exclusive nickel sub defense. They really don't play any dime. So he's a critical piece. And it's hard to find players who can do both those things, and you feel good about that. And they're not a heavy blitz team. In fact, they rush five or more, the lowest percentage of any team in the league. But there are times when they do use him as a blitzer from the slot, and he's very good at it. So he's just a really, really important player. A great example of a player that if you just look at the player, you're not going to sit here and say he's one of the three or four best corners in the league, but he's critical to what they do. And that's ultimately how teams think. It's how teams think when they go into a draft. They think, can we draft a player who's better than the player we have at that particular position? And he's a really good player in the context of their defense. So without him, they couldn't do a lot of the things that they do.
And would you add Renardo Green to that same conversation as far as the fit that he has been in his rookie year to a team that had to play without Mooney Ward this weekend?
Yeah, well, again, he hasn't played enough to say that he's a critical piece in that, you know, but as I've told you guys, I really liked his college tape. He played at Florida State, which in the 2 years he was there, they were a very heavy press man team. So that was his experience, and I loved him doing that. But he's shown the ability to play off coverage, and you know it'll be interesting to see what's Ward's contract status.
Yeah, he's a free agent after this year, and obviously going through an awful personal situation.
Yeah, I know. And again, you hate to talk about a guy when he's going through a personal situation, yeah. But they could very well let him walk, and Green and Lenore could become the outside corners in their base, and then we'll see what they would do in their nickel, because Lenore would still move inside, I assume, because he's so good at it. But Green, to me, is for sure going to be a starting corner for them next year. And he is right now, for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. Ward, I think, is still tracking toward not coming back this weekend as he deals with his family situation.
Yeah, I know, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's brutal. Greg Cosell, NFL Films with us. Greg, let's talk about Nick Bosa for a second. He had a huge sack, and then there was the play that everybody talked about where Baker took him for a ride. But outside of that, I thought they largely locked him up more than normal, and I know he was playing hurt. What did you see in terms of Nick in this game versus what you normally see?
Well, first of all, you got to be careful, and I'm being honest with you guys, you got to be careful about doing this, because the Bucs gained 215 yards of offense. They averaged 3.7 yards per play.
Yep.
This was a dominant defensive performance overall. Mayfield completed 18 passes for 116 yards. You have to try to be that bad. So, you know, you have to be careful about pointing out one guy. You know, Bosa is not going to get five sacks every week. That doesn't happen. And, you know, and I'm being honest with you guys, so I hope you appreciate what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Nick Bosa is not a different player today than he was 2 weeks ago. So, you know, he's not going to have, you know, he had a big sack in the fourth quarter against the backup left tackle when he just basically just played off contact and beat him to the inside. And that turned out to be, you know, obviously a big sack. They went empty on that play on 3rd and 13, which kind of surprised me. I don't rip coaches, but I was surprised because that left Bosa one-on-one on the backup left tackle. So, you know, Bosa is just a really, really good player. If you were to, if we had an offensive lineman who, an offensive tackle who played against Bosa regularly on this call right now, they would rave about how difficult he is to block.
Oh,
I'm telling you,
yeah, Greg,
I'm telling you right now.
I challenge none of that. Here's what I'd say to me, he did not look like himself in this game.
Who do you look like?
A lesser pass rusher. So, somebody who just in school could largely stop on most plays.
Well, you also have to remember that there was a lot of quick game throws. You know, when the ball comes out quick,
sure,
pass rushers are not going to get there, and it just looks like there's no pass rush. I mean, they didn't throw the ball down the field hardly at all. In fact, the one time they really wanted to was the time that Green actually got beat on the out and up by Miller, and Collins was able to apply pressure on Mayfield, and he had a spin away, and he threw it late. You probably remember this play.
Yep.
And Green was able to recover. But for the most part, everything was quick. They didn't throw the ball. And you know what that tells you? We're very worried about the pass rush, because if everything's going to be quick, they know that takes care of the pass rush.
Yeah, and I had that as a first and 10, Greg, at the end of the third quarter with a great pass breakup. And also, according to my notes, they had no explosive plays. Nothing that Tampa Bay netted 20 or more yards.
Right. So again, let's be careful because you have to look at when you feel like there's not a great pass rush, okay? The first thing you want to think about is what does the pass game look like by the opponent? Because if everything is going to be quick and the ball's going to come out, you're not really going to get meaningful pressure. And that doesn't mean that the pass rushers are doing a lousy job.
Greg, how much of that also has to do with the fact that the Bucs' downfield threats are largely hurt?
Yeah, well, that you have to play to your talent. I mean, they're playing with Miller, who's a free agent out of Furman. They're playing with Rakeem Jarrett, who I believe was a free agent, but he's out of Maryland. I'm trying to remember who the third wideout was. Otten, in many ways, is their number one target right now, and he's a tight end who's not really a three-level dimension. He's kind of a short to intermediate receiver.
Looking ahead now, as we always pivot with you, Greg, and we start to think about the next game, and it's now week 11 with Seattle up next on
big
the schedule
game, yeah.
At Santa Clara. What do you see from Seattle on film that might pose a threat to the Niner defense?
Well, Seattle's got good players. That's the thing. The big issue for them has been O-line. This is a game where you would expect to see the 49ers D-line be a factor. Now, Seattle is aware that their O-line is bad, so obviously, they're going to try to mitigate against that. We'll see what they do. But their O-line has been a problem all season long. They've struggled at right guard. They drafted a kid from Connecticut named Christian Haynes, who has obviously not won the job because they're playing Bradford at right guard, and he struggled for much of the season. The right tackle, I don't know if Abe Lucas is back this week coming off the bye. He's missed basically the whole season, and they've really struggled at right tackle. And even Charles Cross, a top 10 pick, he has not been as good as they hoped at left tackle. He's a good player. He's not a stiff. But when you draft a guy in the top 10 at left tackle, you're expecting him in his third year to start being in that conversation of the top 3, 4, 5 left tackles in the league, particularly in pass protection. That's why you draft tackles in the top 10, pass protection. And he hasn't quite been at that level. So their O-line is their biggest concern, but they do have a lot of weapons. So can they beat you? You know, I assume Metcalf will be back coming off the bye week.
Yep.
They can beat you because those, Metcalf, Lockhart, and Smith-Njigba are really good players.
I look at this, too, and I wonder what a deeper dive would do with regard to the play of Geno Smith. Like, Geno Smith and Brock Purdy are both in the top six in passing yards this year, yet they've both had their bye already. So their yardage per game, pretty high-level stuff. But when you look deeper than just those simple numbers, what do you see from Geno Smith with regard to his effectiveness this year?
Well, Geno Smith, I think, if memory serves me correctly, has thrown more passes than any quarterback in the league, or he's right there. They have thrown the ball a ton.
Yeah.
Right now
he's fourth, Greg, but again, he's at a bye, and the three...
Right. So he's and the three guys
game,
ahead of him...
Yes.
Yeah, the three... Per game, he's thrown the
per
most...
Per game,
he's had,
that
he's
is
had
accurate.
The most dropbacks.
Yeah.
He's had the most dropbacks per game, because the guys ahead of him, my guess would be Burrow, probably Baker, probably Stroud, guys like that.
It's Burrow.
They play.
Yeah, Burrow, Rodgers, and Baker.
Okay, so they've played 10 games.
Yep.
They've thrown the ball way too much. Now, they obviously feel they have to. There have been games, including the first 49er game, if you guys recall it, where they clearly made an early commitment to run the ball, and they could not run it at all against the 49ers. And they've tried that in a couple of games, and they've been unable to generate any sustainability with their run game. And, offensive coaches, the way they think, if you're getting 2 yards running the ball, they can only take that for so long. They start to think, well, I'm not going to bang my head against the wall and gain 2 yards. Let's start throwing it. So he's throwing the ball an awful lot. And because of their O-line, there's been some tough going at times. Because even though Geno's not a statue, he's basically a pocket quarterback at his core. That's what he is. So you don't want him having to run around and try to be improvisational. So they've struggled at times, and he's struggled at times. I mean, the numbers are still pretty good, although he's thrown probably a few more interceptions than they would like.
Leads the league. Yeah, he's tied for the league lead in interceptions.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, and he hasn't thrown as many touchdowns, I'm sure, as we've seen in the last couple of years. You know, I think that that's been their big problem. When you have to throw that much your O-line, you know, no offensive lineman wants to be in that reactive pass protection mode for an entire game, and that's hard.
Yeah, it's much better for an offensive lineman to go forward than to go backward. Yep. And I'm thinking about this Niner offense now, Greg, when you've got CMC back and you've got Ricky Pearsall getting comfortable. How much more of a threat are they against Seattle in this matchup?
Well, I think, look, Kyle Shanahan obviously is going to tweak certain things depending on the opponent. He's, you know, he knows Mike McDonald well, I'm sure, because they played, you know, Baltimore last year, and coaches tend to coach against coaches more than they coach against personnel, unless there's a great player that you've got to deal with, and they don't really have that guy. So he's going to coach more against what he believes Mike McDonald's schemes will be. You know, but I think the Niners, for the most part, kind of do what they do. Like I said, there's always going to be tweaks depending on who the opponent is. But, you know, they kind of do what they, you know, we talked about the Pearsall play. That's what the foundation of their offense is. If I'm not mistaken, Tom Brady did that game this past week.
That's correct.
And he talked a lot during the game. And, you know, he obviously knows a little bit about the pass game. And he was just talking about the foundation of their pass game numerous times during the telecast is between the numbers. And I've said that to you guys. That's their pass game. That's the way they play. That's not going to dramatically change. That doesn't mean every single throw is between the numbers, but that's what they're going to do. That's the way they work their pass game. And by the way, they've got major issues at linebacker. It's funny because they just cut Terrell Dotson. He was their leading tackler, but I had a great conversation with Hugh Millen last week, and you guys probably know Hugh Millen.
Yeah,
of course.
And he, you know, we were talking about the fact that Dotson, despite that, the tape is not very good at all. And then 3 days later or 4 days later, they cut him. So, you know, the tape doesn't lie. You can see stuff on tape. So they've got major issues at linebacker.
Hey, Greg, real quick, just thinking about the weather this weekend, there's a little bit of a chance of rain. And I know it's hard for, maybe it's hard for you to look at tape and tell this, but there's this idea from 49er fans that Brock Purdy struggles with a wet football. I'm thinking of Cleveland last year. I'm thinking of the playoff game against Green Bay.
Yeah.
In your film study, is that something that you've noticed that he struggles when there's weather?
You know, that's a hard thing for me to answer. I mean, you know, that's a personal thing for a quarterback. You know, it's probably more mental than anything for a quarterback. You know, it becomes physical, obviously, but maybe he does. I don't know. I don't know if the sample size is large enough. Like, I don't know if he struggled in those two games. I remember the Cleveland game very well, which they should have won with the missed field goal at the end, and he had the great drive, you know, to get to that situation. You know, he's made some really good throws in that game. So I can't answer that because you don't want to get caught up in the idea that when he makes a bad, you know, the weather bothers him. But then what happens when he makes a great throw? Did the weather just not bother him throw?
Then it doesn't bother him, exactly.
Right, you can't get caught up. So I don't know. Only he can answer that. You know, I know Troy Aikman always talked for years about how he hated rain, and, you know, some quarterbacks I'm sure are like that. I don't know if that's true with Brock.
Greg, can't wait to break this one down with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, there it is. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, joins us every single week. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Coming up next, you unearth this, and we can't wait to get to it. Fred Warner and Draymond Green have a conversation with one another about how to win a championship.
I love it.
It's pretty great stuff.
Yep.
You're going to want to hear this. That's next on Willard and Dibbs.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, 888-957-9570 is the number. Check it out on YouTube or on the Odyssey app, or you can hang out later in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll circle back to Dubs a little bit. Kevon Looney crashed the crossover earlier today and was an absolute blast. And so you'll enjoy it if you missed it. You're definitely going to want to hear it. So we got that for you. And then we don't get a chance to do this very often. You know, like, today's the kind of day where you're like, I'm in a little bit of a mood to talk about some things that are going on with both teams.
Yep.
That we're talking about right now. I mean, I guess we could weave the Giants in. They have announced that Randy Wynn is now a part of the staff.
Big.
It's huge.
Good get. Go Dodgers.
Well, I like Randy Wynn. Randy,
I do too.
Yeah,
good
Randy,
guy.
Randy has been named the vice president of player development. Anyway,
no, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
And I hope that he's able to develop the players, because one thing under Farhan that many people have criticized, including my father-in-law, is that players didn't seem to develop.
Yeah, I mean, some
Marco
did.
Marco Luciano did not learn how to field.
Luciano did not.
Right.
Right? Like, don't forget, there's some other players who've come up.
Right. Matos had a great eight days.
Yeah.
Ramos developed.
Elliot Ramos developed. Tyler Fitzgerald was interesting last year.
Kyle Harrison had, you know.
He came through the system. We'll see where he goes next.
Yep.
Hayden Birdsong was, that was an interesting ride last year.
Patrick Bailey has developed, but in general, it doesn't feel like the development of the players has been as good as you would want.
I will say this. I heard this from Buster Posey earlier today, and this is, I do think, interesting. Some people will care about this. Buster very firmly stated, Bob Melvin will make the lineup.
Okay.
Bob Melvin.
Good. Imagine that.
John Sally.
Right.
A manager managing his team.
Well, yeah.
That's crazy.
Like, for those of you who don't know, he wasn't the final call on the lineup before.
Right.
He was not. Now he is.
Yes.
So.
No, that's good.
Do with that what you will.
For me, that's good news. Yeah. Because if you're the manager, it would be like Steve Kerr putting out his starting five, and then Mike Dunleavy going, we're not going to start. We're not going to start D'Anthony Melton tonight.
That's enough for me, Doug.
Exactly. We're going to go with pods, Steve. I'm Mike Dunleavy, and I make the lineup here.
Just pods. No four other players.
Just pods.
We're going with just pods.
That's it.
That's what the computer says.
That's right.
Anyway.
Whatever.
So how about this? Draymond went on Fred Warner's podcast. Fred Warner and Draymond together.
Stand on it.
Oh, I thought you were going to do the whole
stand
thing.
Stand on what you do.
Stand on what you say. Stand on what you do.
There you go. Yeah.
Stand on what you say.
It's got to go down, and then it goes back
stand
up.
Stand on what you do. I love it. And he was telling Fred, basically, to stand on it.
Well, pretty much.
Yep.
I mean, I find this fascinating in multiple ways. Because, first of all, it's two huge personalities here in Bay Area sports, both very successful, but one has four rings, and one maddeningly does not have a couple of rings. But at the same time, these are different sports and different personalities, so peep this. Check where this goes, okay? This is on, and Fred's podcast is called The Warner House. Okay, and he often does it with his wife. I think that's where they got the idea of calling it the Warner House. But on Fred Warner's podcast, Draymond is a guest, and they start talking about how to win a championship.
Once you do it, you know how. And once you know how to do it, like, we won a championship in 2022, not because we were the best team. Mm. We won a championship in 2022 because we knew how. Like, right. Steph, Clay, and I knew how to win. And so we knew how to win a championship. Boston didn't know how to win a championship. And so when it came down to it, one of the things that the Chiefs have over y'all is something that y'all will have to get over is they know how to do it. So in every single moment, they have something to draw from to say, oh, this is like this and we did this, or the mindset now has to be that, or if we can attack this guy, he'd be like attacking that guy when we did this, right? And so you start to make those correlations.
Okay, how's that grab you? That's what the Chiefs have over y'all.
Yes, it's muscle memory. It's championship memory. And when you get to that moment and you go out for the overtime coin toss and Patrick Mahomes runs off the field screaming, they want the ball! They want the ball! They want it! You know you're in trouble. And even not this past week, but the week before, when they go to overtime and Cincinnati, you know, it wasn't Cincinnati. Who did Kansas City? It was Tampa. It was Tampa. Yeah, and Baker Mayfield immediately is crestfallen, and he drops his head knowing what's about to happen. Because Mahomes in overtime is an automatic victory. And so you get to these games, the championship games, and the Niners go up against Patrick Mahomes, and he's been there, and he's done it. And I do think that Draymond is right about the championship pedigree. This is where the championship pedigree actually matters. When you are in the championship round, when you're down in a series and you've been down and you've won and then you've won the title and then you've had a parade, when you get in those moments, you can look at each other and go, we know what this is. We know how to do this. Let's go out there and do it.
Okay. I'll buy all that. Listen to who's saying it. But one of the first thoughts that goes into my head is, like, is it the same sort of a plane to have an NBA player say this to an NFL player? Simply because of math, you're talking about so many more people
who
have an effect on an NFL game.
And more games, too, right?
More games, and, like, one of the things that I think Draymond, and we'll play some more of this, one of the things he's referencing and that you referenced in when we were talking about this earlier is, like, well, when you're down in a series, like, here's how we sort of handle that. Well, in football, you don't get a series. You get the second half. You better get your butt together or you out.
You get the one piece.
Right. And so, like, in the NBA, NBA championships are largely controlled, not 100%. I'm a believer in strength in numbers, but they're controlled by two or three stars. They are the straw that stirs the drink, and that's why we tend to feel like we sort of know throughout an NBA season. We can pick five teams, and we're like, it's one of those, right? Are Tatum and Brown going to do it this year? Is it going to be Jokic again? Does Giannis want to have a turn? Last year, it was almost Luka and Kyrie. We don't think about it in terms of the whole roster through 12, but in football, I think we do. I think we do. Sure, there's the quarterback, and so we definitely focus on that person getting over the top and winning a ring. But can Draymond Green look at a linebacker and be like, you don't know how to do it yet? I mean, Fred Warner's played wonderfully in these games.
Yeah, he has, but he hasn't won. So he could look at Fred and say, you know, you haven't done it, and until you do it, you don't really know what it feels like to do it. So I think that that is a fair way to look at it. And Fred's been great, and, you know, they've played well, but they haven't gotten it done. And I do think if they go up against Kansas City again in the Super Bowl, there's going to be that feeling of, how do we do this? They've done it. Kansas City has no doubt how to do it. They've won two in a row.
Sure.
Patrick's won three. Kelsey's won three. Andy's won three. When you go into that game, that moment, even if it's the wild card game or the divisional round game, you've been there and you know it and you felt it and you've done it. So there isn't that feeling of how. It's the feeling of if, you know, can we do it? We know how to do it. Are we going to be able to do it today in this moment? And for the Warriors, I do know that when they get into a series, and 2 years ago was the one where it kind of struck me today, because I think that Sacramento in that moment was probably better than the Warriors. And Sacramento probably should have won that series against the Warriors.
Oh,
they had game seven at home, and the Warriors were... they were not in shambles, but they had just blown it in game six here at home.
They were vulnerable, at least.
They were getting on a bus with question marks.
Yes.
And then they got on the bus, and Steph said, if you're getting on the bus, get on the bus and be ready to win. And Steph went there, and he put everybody on their shoulders, and he had already won three of those things, or he'd already won four of them, I apologize, and he went out there and he did the damn thing. They did it, and they had done it. Sacramento hadn't, and I do think that that is a big reason why they won that series. And then you go to L.A., and you're going up against a team, and LeBron's like, yeah, I've done it. I did it here. I did it there. I did it everywhere. I'm Dr. Seuss. I did it on a boat. I did it with a goat. I did it here. I did it there.
Cut that, please. And none of the show doesn't matter anymore. Just cut that.
Green eggs and ham.
No, cut that. It doesn't matter. Take everything else he just said out and just get that one sentence.
And it's, you
thanks,
know,
Grandy. Appreciate
being
you,
in a fraternity in the 80s, it's oddly accurate. But anyway.
Good Lord.
They didn't have it. They didn't have that edge against LA. The edge that they had against Sacramento was no longer there.
Right, I mean, sometimes, okay. Like,
Oh, no.
Just, I mean, maybe a little devil's advocate, but hold on a second.
Go ahead. Well,
thank you, Grady. Sometimes I get a little,
yeah.
I'm not annoyed. That's not the right word. But this does feel a little pat on the back. Draymond patting himself on the back. In other words, like, you don't know how to do it until you do it. Well, there was a first time for everybody. So did you just slip and accidentally fall into that? And this is like telling somebody, I used to hate this when you're coming out of college and every job that you apply for, they're like, well, we're looking for someone with experience. Well, at some point, every single human being who has a job, somebody took a chance on them to come in and learn something that they weren't already doing, or else there would be no such thing as people working. You have to do something for the first time every time.
Yeah.
So when Draymond says this, like, I don't know, man, can you really look at the San Francisco 49ers, who have been in the last 5 years in almost every scenario imaginable? They've been in the playoffs. They've been injured. They did it with that quarterback. They did it with this quarterback. They've been down. They've been down big. They've been up big. Right? They've been up big. Yeah. They've coughed that up. They've faced every scenario. And then you end up in overtime of the Super Bowl with the ball inside the five-yard line. And do we honestly believe that that's what it came down to? You didn't know how to do it? Like, score a touchdown.
Yep.
An offensive lineman goes the wrong way. Did he go the wrong way because he doesn't know how to win a championship?
No, but games are not always won or lost in the final moments. And I think about Christian McCaffrey in the opening drive in the first quarter, and he fumbles. And McCaffrey's not known for fumbling, and he fumbled. And George Kittle is standing near the ball that's loose, and he's talking to another guy named right. George, saying, oh my God, you're George, and I'm George, and we're two Georges.
That's amazing.
And the one George is like, excuse me, George, while I dive on this fumble that's loose.
But the Chiefs turned the ball over also in that game.
Fine, but what I'm saying is,
like, is that he fumbled because he doesn't know how to win a championship?
It's not because he doesn't know how to win, but until you go out and you win, I do think that there's a certain amount of muscle memory that goes with being a championship winning team. And when you do win that and you get to that moment again, you've got that muscle memory of having been a champion.
Here's how I would say it, because I think there's something to what you're saying. First off, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.